Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
GCHD1.
Atlanta Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
An Odyssey Sports Station.
We all we got right now. We all we need. We can do this.
Getting you ready for today's game with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
A complete look around the NFL and especially our Falcons.
Let's go out there and compete. Let's focus in on what our job is and do our job.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show, brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer.
This is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
On the home for our Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick.
Good morning. Welcome in. Another Falcons game day is upon us, live from Colony Square. The Wade Ford Tailgate Show, Andy Bunker, smoking Joe Patrick for the next 2 hours. Noel pushing the buttons, getting you ready for the Falcons and the Panthers this afternoon at 1 o'clock. We'll take you up to the Falcons Radio Network pregame show at 11, and we've got a lot to get into and discuss over the next couple of hours. But first and foremost, good morning to you, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Andy. I'm doing great. You know, it's like it feels optimistic about the Falcons after last week. And it's weird. It's like they're 1-1. You wouldn't normally feel this way. But I was kind of joking on Twitter this week. It was like the biggest argument that Falcons fans are having or were having at that point in time was the fact that Younghoe Koo was still on the roster and that they were using a practice squad on kicker. Don't even have to worry about that anymore. So I don't even know what Falcons fans are arguing about at this point.
They're arguing with Panthers fans about whether or not it's a rivalry. That's what they're arguing about.
Okay, okay.
Because Panthers fans, and this is...
Panthers fans want it to be a rivalry?
Yeah. It's such a bless-your-heart situation. And it happens in college football all the time. Like, I think Georgia Tech fans kind of go through this, where Georgia sort of views Florida or whoever. I think Florida probably is the main rival, and Tech views Georgia as the main rival, and Tech's just kind of, Georgia's kind of like...
Right. Well, a little pat on the head.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Where obviously the Falcons view the Saints as the biggest rival, and the Saints view the Falcons as the biggest rival, and they legitimately despise each other as fan bases, and then the Panthers are like, no, we hate you. And Falcons are like, we don't even think about you.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's the old Mad Men meme.
Yeah, it's the Mad Men on the elevator meme. But yeah, that's been a fun debate this week. It always sucks so much to be the team that's like, yes, you do.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, you do.
We've all been there, too. Yeah, you know, it's like everybody's got a team that's like that. You know, it's like you can't have all your teams be winners.
Well, like with Washington, obviously, we at this point hate Oregon the most. And luckily for us, Oregon hates us the most. But at times, they've had other teams that they think about more. Mm-hmm. And then Washington State, who Washington played last night in the Apple Cup, they're like, no, we hate you. And then we're like, we're leaving the conference.
Right. Yeah.
You guys.
And they're left with like one opponent in their own conference.
Yeah. You and Oregon State can stay, and we're going to go over here and do this.
Leaving the lunch table. They're like picking up and leaving. Yeah.
Which is, it does make like, I do that again with the rivalry game last night. You saw there's signs for that and just making fun of them still being in the Pac-12. And there's part of me, it's like, I wish we were still in the Pac-12 too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's in your blood. You know, it's like, you know, it's where you come from.
Don't forget where you came from.
It's
exactly.
Your heritage.
By the way, Pac stands for Pacific. We're on the West Coast. Okay. At least we're not in the ACC like Cal and Stanford. Anyway, that's what Falcons fans have been spending some of their time on this week. And also, like you said, just kind of being like genuinely optimistic, and I think not just, you know, we all do this with our teams. Sometimes you just talk yourself into stuff. You saw what happened on Sunday night, and it was what we've been asking for this team to do for a decade. plus, really.
Yeah.
They got the quarterback on the ground six times. And they were in his face repeatedly. They hurt him. He's not even going to play for the next couple of weeks because of what the Falcons did to him on Sunday night. And, you know, that's coming off of week one where they got the pressures. They just didn't get Baker on the ground. And that's a story we've heard a lot of times. For them to then turn that into sacks against the Vikings was really, really good sign.
Do you remember in science class when you were a kid and they taught you the difference between qualitative measures versus quantitative measures?
I do.
Or like analysis?
So yes, I also am a nerd and so, I do remember that, yes.
I knew you would. I knew you would. I knew we could bond over this. That's how I feel like Falcons fans are. It's not the quantitative analysis for Falcons fans at this point in time. Again, they're 1-1. The offense has kind of like been hit and miss in certain areas of the offense. But I think generally what Falcons fans are loving about this team so far through two games is just the way, especially that they're seeing this defense play. Because I think a lot of Falcons fans understand that this team kind of had a cap on it if the defense was going to play at a level that, frankly, I think a lot of fans expected them to be, which was not very good. But if the defense is able to perform, not just like statistically how they have for these first two games, but just in the way that you see the team play, this kind of qualitative analysis of watching them get to the quarterback in the manner that they do, the dynamism, the athleticism along that that defensive front, that I think is what is exciting people the most about this Falcons team right now and what they could potentially be. And we know that we're not there yet in game three, but where are they going to be in game six? Where are they going to be in game 10? And can they be one of those teams that just starts to kind of get better and better as the season goes and crescendos towards the playoffs like the best teams in the NFL tend to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the parts of it that is so exciting is there's a lot of room for growth also. Like, it's not like you came out and beat Minnesota, you know, 36-10 and basically did everything right and played a perfect game of football. That game was still tight in the fourth quarter because the offense just couldn't get in the end zone. So obviously that's something that that we hope to see today against Carolina and something that they can work on. But yeah, that idea of adding this and then improving that and then this player growing and then maybe this player coming back from injury and like all of it coming together as the season goes on and then peaking in December and, and on beyond that, hopefully, is exactly what the best teams do.
The style of play is there, though, right now.
Oh, exactly. You can see the traits. You're not seeing all of the results yet, which, again, makes sense given how many new pieces and how many young players are on the team. But there's something we talked about. I don't know if it was the first week of the show or Thursdays when you come on with us or whatever. I don't know. Some point we talked about it, about how the Falcons just haven't peaked at all at the end of the season. Like they've had these weird little mini peaks in the middle. Last year, it was kind of like weeks 7, 8, and 9, and then obviously fell off a cliff. And by the end of the year, they were just, you know, they were flailing. The best teams don't do that. The best teams continue to get better and run through the finish line. And then when the playoffs come around, they really know who they are. Again, we're a very long way away from any of that.
Absolutely.
But qualitative, quantitative is kind of another way of saying eye test versus numbers. And it's early for a lot of big picture numbers because it's only 2 weeks. But eye test, returns on a lot of this stuff, eye test is positive.
Yeah, and we'll see how they trend again. Like I think that what we're saying here is that we're starting to see that there is the potential for that to happen with this team. It's not that it's going to happen. And I would say like one of my fears with this team is that they are just not. Maybe there's more depth than we thought, especially in some areas like on defense, especially across that defensive front. It feels like Nate Ollie's got a lot of these guys playing kind of at the maximum level of what they can do. But I would still say it's generally a top heavy team where when you do lose a starter, it feels like a bit of a disaster. Like we don't have a player that can step up and replace this type of player. And with a team with an early bye, you never know if, you know, injuries happen in the NFL and if the certain ones happen that affect certain players, then that could potentially derail some of this. But I just generally think that, you know, it's very positive right now. It's probably more positive through 2 weeks than maybe I would have expected. And especially it's important considering the fact that this is a very difficult part of the Falcons schedule right now. You felt like if you got through the opening 4 weeks ahead of the bye at 2-2, then you were doing pretty well. And like we're sitting at a place right now before week three where it's like not only are a lot of Falcons fans expecting the Falcons to go out there and win today, but win in a pretty dominant fashion, a fashion that you would expect a playoff team to be, that would put you at 2-1 with now it looks like a much more winnable game against Washington in week four.
Yeah, with Jaden Daniels being injured, he's not going to play today. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's something that we will monitor throughout the week going into next Sunday. We know who the backup is there. That's a guy we're all very familiar with, which would actually be pretty fun if he starts the game, and also would definitely give the Falcons a better chance to win if he starts the game.
That would be amazing.
Marcus Mariota is who we're talking about for folks that might not know who the Commanders' backup is. That's right. And I also think, especially coming out of the way that week one ended. I mean, the team played pretty well week one. There was plenty of positives. It's not as easy to talk about the positives. It feels like a silver linings thing coming off of a loss, but the way that it happened was pretty clear.
Yeah.
The kicker misses a kick that would have sent it to overtime, and he's a guy that had everybody tearing their hair out last year too, so it just felt like one of those things that they didn't address. Well, now they have, and they did it quickly, which I think was important, like to handle it like that, to get a new kicker in. He plays last week. He goes 5 for 5. That first one was dicey, but whatever.
I asked him if you saw in the replay, he was like very like charged up. He's fired up after that first field goal. And I asked is that like your normal demeanor after you make kicks? Is that just how you are? Or is that, and he did kind of say that, but he was like, yeah, but that first one was like much more close than
really
I wanted
needed
it to be.
That one to go in for my confidence. And then he was good after that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But I just think to handle it like that. And now Ku has been released. Like he's officially gone. Midweek, it was 90% that Romo would be the kicker. Now it's 100%. I don't know what the 10% difference was, but whatever. That's sort of the direction that they're headed in now. And because they cleaned it up so quickly and he did well in week two, I don't know. Doesn't it kind of feel like that makes what happened in week one feel a little bit better, that they addressed it immediately and moved on?
I think so. I think there's a lot of things that actually make you feel better about week one. The other, I think, is the fact that the Bucks went out and then beat the Texans on the road in week two.
Very similar fashion.
Yeah, and I think that they proved that they're like a quality team. I feel like the NFC South has been besmirched, rightly so, because it's been a weak division, but the Buccaneers are a genuinely good team. And I wonder, now they have injuries mounting up on their offensive line, I do wonder if they were to play that game again now in week three, considering where both teams are at, if the Falcons wouldn't win that one. It'll be interesting to see when they play again down the line, although it's a couple months in the
future. December 11th.
But I think that you're just feeling, I think you're just feeling better about.
It's a Thursday game.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they'll be in the throwback. So it'll be a throwback game.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I just generally think, again, to go back kind of back to the qualitative measure, yes, the quantitative analysis, this final score, the stats are what they were in that game. You didn't run it like you wanted. That game didn't play out necessarily like you wanted. But I think you're generally feeling okay about the way that team played in that game, considering all those things. And, I think that, the signs are, arrows are just pointing upward for this Falcons' potential and what they can be this season.
Wade Ford Tailgate Show brought to you by Bear and Burton's W Sauce. We can't control the score, but you can still bring home the W. W Sauce is your ticket to next level flavors on game day. Pick up a bottle today and bring home the W. We're with you till 11 o'clock today, so we have a lot of time to get into what needs to happen in order to beat the Panthers up there in Charlotte. We'll get into some audio coming up next as well. But just off the top, if you had to, I mean, last week we did what's the one or two things you have to clean up from week one to week two? And I think that they did for the most part, especially from a special teams perspective and an actually getting the quarterback on the ground perspective.
Mm-hmm.
A run game and the offensive line, like really, honestly, all the stuff that we talked about, hey, like this has to be
the
better.
The core building blocks that you need for this team to be good.
Run game, sack the quarterback, don't turn the ball over. Play some special teams, not only make your kicks, but also cover well and all that. They really did a lot of that stuff.
Yep.
What is it this week? If it's a 2 week snapshot that needs to get better, or maybe it's a week to week from week two to week three, like what's on the top of your list?
Again, and it goes from week two to week three, is executing in the red zone, especially being able to do so through the air. Like if the Falcons get into the red zone today and are able to punch the ball in on the ground, that would be good. I mean, that would be an improvement from what they were last week. But I think if you do want to be successful in the NFL, sustainably, you do need to move the ball in the air in the red zone. And frankly, it's not just a week two to week three thing. I think that it's an issue that cropped up for the Falcons even toward the end of last year with Michael Penix. And I think that that was one of the rightful criticisms of him was his ability to like put some touch on some balls in the corners of the end zone. We saw him miss on a couple against Washington in week 17 of last season. We saw him be able to hit the deep shots and such like he did against Carolina. But it's some of those finer touches where you don't have the vertical room like Michael Penix likes to exploit, where they need to show improvement this week.
Yeah, I'm in agreement as far as the red zone. I would also like to see him have vertical room, like in the middle of
that'll
the field,
good.
Too.
Yeah,
like,
he hasn't completed the pass of a target more than 15 yards downfield yet this
has
year.
Has he even tried one? Like, how many of
he has tried. Has he? Okay. And honestly, he maybe should have had a couple. There was a couple toward the end of that Bucs game, the one that Kadarius Hodge didn't get his head turned around, which is a great ball.
There was also
one right before that to Casey Washington that was knocked out by Antoine Winfield.
Yeah, both of those very easily could have been receptions.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, let's get one.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
two or five or however many today.
If you got one of those.
I mean,
they might be 2-0 right now.
That's his superpower, you know?
I mean, throwing
the ball down the field and that arm strength. It's been great to see the accuracy in the intermediate and short game.
No turnover-worthy plays for Michael Penix so far. The only quarterback in the NFL has completed two full games.
We love that.
Yeah,
we love it. We love to see it. We love to see it. But I'd like to see, you know, let it rip a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means it's a turn. I don't want it to be a turnover-worthy throw downfield. I want it to be caught by the Falcons.
Of course.
Of course. I'm not really.
But you're willing to take that risk.
Be a little risky.
Yeah.
You know, and today maybe
we can do that today.
Today might offer that opportunity given the opponent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll say plenty of negative things about the Panthers throughout the remainder of the show. We'll come back. We'll let you hear from Raheem Morris. They were singing the praises of Bijan, not surprisingly or undeservingly, but they were really saying some nice stuff about Bijan this week. We'll let you hear some of that coming up next right here on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Go Falcons.
Back to Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick and the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Wade Ford Tailgate Show here with you on a Sunday morning ahead of the Falcons and Panthers this afternoon. Kickoff at 1 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Falcons Network pregame show gets underway at 11. Many of which, many of the participants will be live in Charlotte.
I was going to say, always a good listen.
Always a good listen. Oh, such a good listen. They do a great job. So we'll lead you up into that. We'll do our best as well to set the table for them. We'll look around the NFL and some of the other big ones from today's slate. Also back at some of what happened last week as well, coming up in 20 minutes or so. But before we do any of that, Let's take a listen back to some of the audio from the week. Obviously, Coach met with the media a number of different times, Michael Penix and some of the others. Let's hear Raheem Morris talking about some of the young guys on defense and the pass rush from last weekend.
No, it's just a lot of pressure from Mr. Blink to get after the passer, and those guys really respond when he comes down. Those guys really respond when we bring those guys in. No, all joking aside, we brought those guys in to do that, and I don't know if it's contagious, but it's fun, and those guys like to do it. We talked about having to stop the run early. Those guys really went out, buckled down on the run, forced these guys to be one-dimensional. They was able to get after them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, one of the best pass rush performances we've seen from a Falcons defense in quite a while. I think 7 is the most they've had in the last 10 years or so, and some game in 2018 or something.
Yep.
But yeah, 6. They've had 6 a couple of times, but great to see them do that again on Sunday. And it was cool to see all the rookies get involved as well. I mean, obviously, both first-round draft picks had a sack on Sunday. Both of the later-round draft picks in the secondary had an interception on Sunday. And, you know, you're not going to see a rookie class have that type of production all in one game like you did against Minnesota. But we saw it, and it was great to see.
By the way, they say that Raheem Morris doesn't yell enough or speak enough on his headset during the games. Do you hear his voice there?
Yeah.
Man lost his voice.
Yeah, his voice sounded like it was gone.
Also, it's interesting how...
It was pretty loud in there on Sunday
night.
That's
what I was going to say. It's funny how coaches lose more of their voice when they're on the road, you know, when they have to be yelling over that crowd noise, which sounded insane in Minnesota.
It sounded insane.
I'm jealous of the environment that they're able to create there.
And they had... Who did they have? Jared Allen out pregame, right? Like one of the legends of the franchise. They got that big Viking horn that they blow. It was crazy in there, and it affected him.
No doubt about it.
Was really something that was it was pretty frustrating actually to watch. Mm-hmm. That first drive that they had where they handed to Bijan a couple times and he gets loose.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get down there. I don't know if they were quite in the red zone, but they were near. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't get the play in.
But to go back to this pass rush, I think the other great thing about it to see was that it wasn't just one guy or even two guys that were at the center of it. I think there were 6 Falcons players that had 3+ pressures in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That is the sign of a good defense, of like when everybody's having their turn, kind of getting in the backfield, creating turnovers. Zach Harrison, you know, had a sack fumble. You obviously saw these rookies getting to the quarterback. Just so great to see.
Randy gave me a stat during the week that 11 different guys had at least 5 rushes. Now, it didn't mean they got to the quarterback as far as pressures and stuff, but
I saw even D'Angelo Malone was in there.
11 different guys sort of taking turns in that rotation, keeping people fresh, and clearly it paid dividends. It is also fun to see different guys getting involved, too. Like, obviously, we want to see Jalen Walker and James Pierce because they were the first rounders from last year, mm-hmm. and they're new and all of that stuff, but like Zach Harrison's been here for a little while, and mm-hmm. has shown flashes, and you've heard defensive coaches kind of rave about what he can do. And he folded J.J. McCarthy up like a lawn chair and caused the sack in that game against the Vikings, and he's looked pretty good early.
But I think that when you talk about 11 rushers, I think this speaks to what we were talking about in that first segment with maybe the lack of depth or wanting to develop that depth, or just – you know, keep some of these guys fresher for longer into the season so that when you do get into those key games toward the end of the season, when you do get to the playoffs, you do still have this young defensive group that still has the energy and the ability to get after the quarterback in the way they want. I think it's important to remember that Raheem Morris had a lot of success with the Rams with a very young core, playing, what, like 9 rookies or something across the course of that season on that defense, including several that really impressed, especially given where they were drafted. And he knows, I think, how to maintain some of these guys because, you know, ask any NFL player, they'll tell you that rookie year is the longest year that you have of your entire career because of everything that you have to go through in the pre-draft process and then going, you know, the shock of the improved level of play that you see at the NFL level and then going through that long grinding NFL season, which is the longest season they play just in terms of games in their career. I think it's really smart in the way that Raheem Morris is probably leading the management of these young players, especially on defense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And it's something that's very common around the league now too. Like, you want to see a rotation on your defensive line. I know that we heard from their D-line coach, they don't want to have a guy play more than 4 straight plays.
Right.
You want to be able to keep people fresh and rotate them in. And obviously that helps on Sunday. It also helps throughout the course of the season as well, like you're saying. Another thing that has happened so far this year, and you had a great theory on it when I asked you about it on Thursday during the show. I hadn't thought about what you suggested. I just thought, you know, Sunday Night Football, Bijan goes off. He's been around for a couple of years. People are kind of getting more familiar with him. Your thought that, well, yeah, he's also been very productive fantasy-wise the first couple of weeks, and that makes the world go round. I think you're probably more right about that than my theories. Like, I think that probably is why Bijan's getting his praises sung nationally the way that he is. I don't think that's why Raheem was saying what he was saying or why Michael Penix was. But here's Michael Penix talking about his running back.
Man, he is who everybody say he is. I feel like he's the best running back in this league, and he shows it each and every day, not just on Sundays, but on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way throughout the week. You know, he shows it each and every day, the way that he practices, you know, the mentality that he has. You know, you can tell he loves his game, and he loves his players, and he loves his team. So it's great to be able to have somebody like that. And like I said, man, he helped us win the football game, so it means a lot to have somebody like him.
A guy in California doesn't care if Bijan Robinson puts a crazy juke on somebody unless it's helping that guy in California put money in his pocket.
Uh-huh.
That is what generally right. makes people like other players.
That's also
that are
why
not
Kyle Pitts
team.
Is one of the least popular players.
100,000%.
People
totally
in California
correct.
Don't care that Kyle Pitts was drafted fourth overall mm-hmm. and he's sort of been disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
They care that they took him in the second round of their fantasy draft a couple times and they keep getting talked into it. And by the way, Kyle Pitts has had a really nice start to this
year
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that it's been super productive fantasy numbers,
right.
but I think he's. Of the targets that he's had, all but two of them have resulted in catches. Now, he hadn't gotten in the end zone yet. Maybe they target him in the red zone today, whatever, but really encouraging to see how Pitts has looked. But yeah, I mean, that's part of it. The other part of it is legitimately, though, like Bijan Robinson is the best football player on the field
yeah.
most Sundays.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, because, you know, the Falcons have had guys like that before. I think most recently Julio Jones could score on any touch. But he's a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And if the quarterback can't get him the ball, the quarterback can't stand up straight, like then, you know, Bijan just hand it to him 15 times a game mm-hmm. and throw it to him 8 times a game.
Right.
And you're going to get 20 plus touches with him every single Sunday. And you know, like you saw the first catch he had, the second catch he had against Tampa
yeah.
in week one.
Third play of the season.
He can score from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And we know this about him, but there's just something about seeing it, and he's off to such a great start
mm-hmm.
that leads to commentary like this, but it's really exciting. Like, you know the type of player he is, and it helps you win a lot of football games when you have a player like that, but just off to such a great start this year, both catching the football
yeah.
and running it.
Yeah, through two games, he's the team's leading rusher and receiver so far in yards.
I believe it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I thought Drake London put it perfectly. I was talking to him on Thursday, and... You know, he said, we were talking about teams kind of guarding Penix over the top, making sure they don't get that top taken off of them like Penix likes to do. And he said, you know, if that's what defenses want to do, that's fine. But the beauty of our team is that if they don't want to protect over the top, we can beat them over the top. And if they protect over the top, we got Bijan. And we can beat them. We can still create explosives through some of these checkdowns. And Drake just said, either way you want to play us, I like our bet. I like our odds, and I thought that was just a great way to phrase it.
Yeah, it is, and it. I mean, you know, it boils down to just trying to create as many problems as you can for the opposition. And you know, over the last handful of years, there's been some problems that the Falcons' offense has been able to cause defenses, but for the most part, it felt like they had pretty good answers
mm-hmm.
for what the Falcons were going to throw at them.
Mm-hmm.
Now with all of the different sort of boxes checked on offense right now, it really does feel like it's got to be a pretty tough week of game planning for this offense. And I'm interested to see, it made sense what Minnesota did given the way week one went with the Falcons run blocking and the run game. It made sense that they played the defense they played. The Falcons gashed them and went for over 200 yards on the ground. So I'll be really interested to see what Carolina does because they've got some really talented players on that defensive line. We'll talk more about Derek Brown and some of those guys as the show goes on. But it'll be sort of one of the chess matches of today will be what they aim to try to take away from the Falcons offense.
And I really feel like Penix's arm strength is the real difference maker in terms of making this team extremely versatile to the point where, like Drake said, he likes his odds no matter how you want to play him. Because even when they had Kirk Cousins, when the team brought in, well, first of all, pre-Kirk Cousins, they obviously had deficiencies at quarterback that were a limiting factor on what this offense could be.
It's a nice way to put it.
Kirk Cousins comes in.
It was a bit limiting,
Kirk,
yes.
Kirk Cousins comes in, raises the bar on that limiting factor, but I still think there were some phases of the passing game that the Falcons could not exploit with him at quarterback, considering what he was dealing with.
That's physically. The thing about last year. Like, obviously, it went how it went. And it was incredibly frustrating. There was always a ceiling mm-hmm. on what was possible with Kirk Cousins mm-hmm. as your quarterback. Even at his best, the ceiling that his teams had, again, obviously the way that it happened was more frustrating than had you lost in the second round of the playoffs or something like that. But yeah, I mean, even Darnell Mooney, you've talked about this multiple times on our show about how he was leading the NFL in 20 plus yard receptions last year. But how many of those could have been touchdowns had he been led?
Often
he had to stop and come back to the ball, or, and that was the route on some of them as well.
But that was because that was the route that could be thrown.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, now, the route that can be thrown, I mean, I don't know what the limit on Penix's deep ball is.
And the other part of the versatility that Penix brings, which I think maybe was unexpected by many, was on display on a throw that he had when Drake London fumbled that reception.
Yeah.
Penix rolls out to his right, so away from his left-handed arm, and kind of drops the arm angle, throws it a little bit sideways, perfectly located to Drake London away from the zone defender. That really makes this Falcons passing attack even that much more dynamic.
There's been a couple different arm angle, like get the ball out quick, just kind of pivot that back foot and sling it out to whether it was Pitts or whoever on the in a little bubble screen. And that one, like you just talked about, where he's rolling to his right, which is hard for a lefty, kind of drop down sidearm and threw that
one
too.
And people were saying that he could only deliver from the pocket.
Yeah, I don't know. People didn't watch him play, I guess, in college.
He wants to deliver from the pocket, and I appreciate that. Like, that's what you need your quarterback to be able to do in the NFL.
He'd throw from anywhere.
Right.
And he can throw on the run really well, too.
Yep.
Like, they actively would roll him out in Washington because the offensive line had some deficiencies. They won the offensive line award in college football that year because I think he only got sacked one time. But part of that was because of him.
Yeah, like, he's got great sack avoidance.
He does have great sack avoidance. I've always said that about him. We're going to come back. We're going to look at some of the other games around the NFL that are going to be played today. We'll also take a look at some of the highlights of last weekend and Thursday night game. Shockingly fun. It was a shockingly fun Thursday night game. Credit to Miami for showing up and trying hard. All right, we'll be right back on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show is on.
Brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
20 minutes away from looking at the injury report with Smoke and Joe Patrick to kick off the 10 o'clock hour here on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Andy Bunker, Joe Patrick with you every single Falcons game day for 2 hours ahead of the Falcons Radio Network pregame show. Falcons Panthers at 1 o'clock this afternoon, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as well. This is the segment where we look around the rest of the NFL, and around the NFL is brought to you by Hatfield. Better pork, head to simplyhatfield.com. Again, as you know, the Falcons and the Panthers play this afternoon at 1 o'clock in Charlotte. We'll spend plenty of time in the 10 o'clock hour breaking that game down further, and I've spent a lot of the first 40 minutes of the show talking about it as well, rightfully so. Looking forward to it. Chance to get to 2-1. Would feel really good about that given how difficult the early part of this schedule is. And today is one of the ones that even before you beat Minnesota and saw how you looked in week one, you looked at and felt like you probably needed to win this one.
Yeah.
Probably could win this one given what Carolina had been and certainly how they've looked through the first couple of weeks. So we'll get there. Before we do that, some other good ones today as well. And the week I thought started off with a really nice one on Thursday night with the Bills and the Dolphins. Did not expect the Dolphins to look like that. Now, ultimately, Tua threw that terrible interception in the fourth quarter and it ended up being a 10-point victory for the Bills. The Bills are going to be tough to beat for anybody this year. And I look forward to hopefully seeing a rematch between them and the Ravens in the playoffs because that game they played in week one was – already the game of the year.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But yeah, the Bills are pretty unstoppable at this point.
They just had these ho-hum wins, you know, like Josh Allen goes 22 for 28 in that game, and it's like
it doesn't even really run.
It's like he sleptwalked through that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they're on a different type of level right now, it feels like. Dolphins, on the other hand, are probably going to have to find a new coach going into next year. Mm. It's just a matter of when they do that. But again, there's always levels to bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not a very good football team, and it's understandable. But they haven't quit, and that's a low bar. But people, I think, expected them to kind of do that after the way the first couple of weeks went, and they didn't on Thursday. So we'll see how long they can give that sort of effort.
I can't even fault, like, the play calling seems fine and everything. Not to put this all in one player, but in the NFL, you are kind of capped. We talked about it in the last segment by your quarterback, mm-hmm. and it just feels like Tua he's clearly not playing at the ability they need to, given how much he's getting paid and how much of the salary cap he's eating up.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, like, okay, every team sort of has a ceiling based on various factors, quarterback ability being probably number one on the list. But most quarterbacks don't have $200 million in contracts if that's the situation, and that's where he's at.
And it's not going to change next year. They could potentially get off him after that, but next year they have no choice but to keep rolling with Tua.
They hitched their wagon to Tua, and unfortunately right now it doesn't look good. Broncos and Chargers today at 4 o'clock. Interesting one, obviously a divisional matchup between the two of them. Broncos offense off to a kind of a rough start. Bo Nix does not look good. He had a really nice rookie season. Meanwhile, the Chargers look fantastic.
Yeah, Chargers look great. Doing it in a totally different way. They're allowing Justin Herbert to really sling the ball around, which not many people expected under a Jim Harbaugh coach team who obviously likes to run the rock.
Yeah.
But they look great doing it. And unsurprisingly so, because Justin Herbert's a great quarterback. And I got to say, I'm not that surprised that Bo Nix is maybe getting found out a little bit. I think after a year of tape and a year of an offseason to prepare for the Sean Payton offense, teams are much better adept at dealing with it.
The only thing that surprised me was how well he played last year.
Exactly. 100%.
We saw Bo Nix play a lot of games, man.
Yeah.
Like, whether it was here and because he played at Auburn, or Oregon was really good and played a lot of big games. He didn't win any of them.
Yeah.
Like, they won a lot of games, but they didn't win any of the big games. And a lot of it came down to him just not being able to throw the ball down
downfield. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what was shocking me when the Falcons went out west and played the Broncos last year. They were just off of their – they're playing off coverage and allowing Bo Nix to throw these little slants and screens and stuff without any kind of interference at all.
What a crap game that was. One of the low moments of the year for sure. So that's at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Chiefs don't have a win yet. They're 0-2 and they have problems. They've got a lot of injuries and certain guys on the team just don't look like maybe they once did. But if there's a good cure for that, it's playing
They'll have a win tonight.
For whatever reason. I mean, I get it, 'cause it's the Chiefs, it's Mahomes and all that, but that game's on Sunday Night Football. I mean, hopefully it's a good one. Both teams are 0-2. And I will say, we sat here and watched the Giants last Sunday play a pretty epic game against the
good
Cowboys.
Good point.
And Russell Wilson was throwing the ball all over the field in that game, his highest yardage total ever in a game, 450 yards. Now, he did throw a terrible interception in overtime that ultimately helped cost them that football game. But they were fun to watch
last
Sunday. So maybe that'll be at least an entertaining watch tonight. But yeah, I think the Chiefs have
not been an entertaining watch
this
year.
Like, they weren't an entertaining watch last year.
Right, that's a great point.
They won a lot of games, but it was not fun to watch.
That's a great point. They were a defensive football team last year, basically.
They would be in a tight battle. It'd be like 19-17 or something like that. And the other team would make a critical error, and then they would kick a field goal at the end.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Patrick Mahomes would do something magical, and then they'd win. They were like 7-1 in one-score games last year.
Something like that.
They went 15-2, didn't
they?
Which is outrageous, given the way that a lot of those games looked. But I mean, they went 15-2 and went to the Super Bowl, so I'm not going to nitpick too hard. Those would be good problems to have. And then Monday night, and we'll get to some of the other games coming up today as well. But these are some of them that were highlighted: the Lions and the Ravens. One of those two teams is going to be 1-2 after Monday Night Football. I think both those teams are quite good. Obviously, you saw the Lions bounce back after their week one loss to the Packers last week against the Bears and scored 50 points. I think clearly trying to prove a point against their former offensive coordinator. And the Ravens obviously lost that heartbreaker in week one to the Bills and looked fantastic last week, too.
Yeah, yeah. So for that reason, like, you still got to like the Ravens. They are favored in this one, but it should be a great game. Like, that's the kind of spectacle game that Monday Night Football deserves. We need to see more of those games on Monday nights.
Yeah, I hope that there's a lot of scoring in that game. Seems like there's a good chance that there will be.
Yeah.
Over under 53.5, so it sets up for a fun one. All right, so you got the backup bowl today between the Bengals and the Vikings.
There's a lot. It feels like there's a lot of backup quarterbacks coming in this week for whatever reason.
Interesting from a Falcons perspective. There's a lot of quarterbacks injured.
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't feel like there's any momentum whatsoever, any conversation whatsoever about a team being interested in Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, it is interesting. I figure that the one team, of all these teams that are missing quarterback right now, the one that would be most likely to come in would be the Bengals, because they've got that pillar, Joe Burrow at the quarterback position. He's going to be out long term, and you've got otherwise a team that is, you know, built to win pretty much. Like, they paid Trey Hendrickson to stick around for another year so they can make this run. And so you would think that they would be invested in getting somebody really, really quality in there. Having said that, I put this on Twitter. The Falcons are not looking to trade Kirk Cousins. Like, he's a great insurance policy for them at the most important position in sports. And if you're Terry Fontenot, the only thing that matters for you is making the playoffs. You know, so you're not just going to give away Kirk Cousins for some, you know, future draft pick that you might not even be around to use if things don't go well for you this year. So you need to protect yourself. And so for that reason, I'm not saying that they wouldn't trade him, but teams are really going to need to make it worth their while. And clearly no teams are feeling like that right now.
Well, it's going to be hard for that to even exist, right? Like, if a team were to trade for him, they're trading for him because they feel like they still have a chance to win, but their backup situation isn't good. So they don't want to give up someone who's currently on their roster that gives them a chance to win, mm-hmm. you know?
Right, like, exactly.
That's the hard part about in-season trades is they're usually for future draft picks.
Yeah.
It's not very often that it's a player-for-player swap, especially like a good player that you're going to get back, because if it was the Bengals or whoever else it might be over the next couple of weeks, why would they give – and, you know, what would even the Falcons want at this point? Like, what would they be looking for? Maybe an offensive lineman? Possibly. Yeah. Maybe something on defense, maybe a corner, given AJ Terrell's injury. I don't know. But like, why would a team trade one of those key pieces?
Yeah.
Who's trying to win?
Yeah.
To get a quarterback in return so they could try to win, but make their team slightly worse in a different place. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
It's hard to imagine a scenario in which there really is a trade market.
And there's also a fundamental difficulty in the sport of football, which is it's so tactical. It's so, it's so team specific. Like, each team is running their own scheme and everything that you can't just kind of plug and play players like you can in the NBA or baseball or whatever. So it makes it more difficult. The reason why, again, it made sense for Cousins to potentially move to the Bengals is because he has played under Kevin Stefanski before when he was in Minnesota. So that would have made a little bit more sense, but it still would have been a difficult situation.
Well, that is a good thing about if it is to ever happen. There's so many offenses right now that are run by people that either coached Kirk Cousins or coached under people that coached Kirk Cousins, right? Like, that's why when Brock Purdy got hurt in San Francisco, a lot of the reaction was, all right, well, how long is it? And maybe, but they love Mac Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Like Kyle Shanahan has long loved Mac Jones. That's why there was all those rumors when he was coming out that they were going to take him third overall.
Right.
They probably should have. They would have been better off than taking Trey Lance, because that was a disaster. I don't even know where Trey Lance is right now.
It's crazy. It's so funny. Like, yeah, there's been like no negative repercussions for them, or at least it feels that way, for having made such a bad draft pick.
It's crazy.
One of the biggest busts we've seen at that high.
And that's also super helpful for Trey Lance, because no one even talks about it. Like,
it
didn't submarine the team, so it's not viewed as one of these great busts like a Jamarcus Russell or whoever, whatever guys he might put on that list. Because the 49ers like went to the Super Bowl the next year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Trey Lance is very thankful for that, actually. No one ever talks about me. No one mentions me.
You could literally have swapped where he and Brock Purdy each got picked, and then it makes sense. But
yeah, totally. Or you could have just not drafted a guy.
Right.
You know? And had the same result, essentially. But yeah, it'll be Jake Browning for the Bengals and Carson Wentz for the Vikings when those two teams square off today. So the Bengals might be 3-0 also. Which is the crazy thing.
That's, wow.
Is that, because I wonder if, because they say 3 months for Burrow. Like, is there a world in which they get off to a 3-0 start and then they can just keep their heads above water, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, go 500 for the remainder of the year, and then Burrow comes back for the playoffs, possibly. Yeah. I don't know, but that'd be pretty fun. Carson Wentz, on the other hand, will start a game for his sixth different team in six consecutive years. No one's ever done that before in NFL
history. That's amazing.
This will be the sixth straight year that he starts a game for a different football team, so... Probably not the type of history that you want to make.
I was going to say, he's just forging.
At least he's still in the NFL starting football games. Packers and Browns also today at 1 o'clock. Maybe the two best defenses in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't even thought about that. I've just been thinking about this Packers team just looks like a total wagon at this point
in
time.
They're so good.
You never know. You know, we're two games into the season, so wagons can fall apart, but it certainly seems like, you know, the Packers have that kind of star power that you need to really be one of those kinds of teams.
We mentioned this one earlier because Marcus Mariota is going to start for the Commanders today. Jaden Daniels officially out. Don't know what that means for next week. Obviously, that's something we'll monitor closely as the Falcons take on the Commanders next weekend. But Mariota starting against the Raiders. Raiders offensive coordinator Chip Kelly, an old Oregon reunion today in Washington. So, yeah. And it's in Washington, so there's a little tie there, too.
And Mariota going up against a former team. Again, someone with a lot of former teams that he's got.
Yeah, the Mariota revenge tour.
You're right, exactly.
He's got the Raiders today.
Yeah, and he could have the Falcons next
weekend. And I don't know. They play the Titans at any point.
It'll be interesting to see how they play without Jaden Daniels, and just so we can see how valuable is he exactly to what they do.
Yeah. Texans, Jags. Any thought on that one? No.
Go team.
Yeah. Go team. what else do we got? Rams, Eagles. I think will be really fun. That's that was a great playoff game last year. The Eagles are 2-0, but they haven't really done much offensively yet. Like, their offense is kind of sputtered. A.J. Brown hasn't gotten involved, really. I think the Rams are quite good. That game's in Philadelphia. I don't know. That one stands out as a pretty interesting one.
The Rams are an interesting one because they've got Stafford, who's like obviously toward the end of his career, but still playing at such a high level. Yeah. But it feels like it could fall apart at any moment if he gets an injury or they have the wrong injuries in the wrong places. But right now, that looks like a great game.
It feels very dicey with Matthew Stafford. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're always on a knife's edge.
I guess it's true for any player in the NFL. Like, any play could be the next play you could get hurt. But with Stafford, it just feels like a tight wire act. But while he's on it, they're very good.
Right.
Cam Jordan, I think, breaks Drew Brees' Saints games played record today when he starts for the Saints against the Seahawks. Wow. So.
That's impressive for a defensive lineman
to be
playing that many games
been
when you're, you know, so easy to get injured in that position.
Yeah, man. And then a couple afternoon games as well. That's one of them. Cardinals and 49ers, and then the Bears and the Cowboys as well. Both of those teams need a win.
So the get-right game for the Cowboys or the Bears? Which one?
I don't know. Both need to get right, so I don't know which one does. All right, make sure you stay tuned later today for the Ticketmaster halftime show. Brought to you by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. We'll come back. Joe will get us caught up on the injury report, and we'll get back into some Falcons and Panthers as well here on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.